so let's roll on. All right, so there are two more key technologies we want to do. Did you stop the audio?
Yeah.
I should notice about the audio. I guess I found one advantage of this mode of delivery is that it automatically logs which URL I'm on at a particular time. So when I'm giving my course this semester, I record the audio to disk, and then I convert it to so-called real audio format, and then cut it up according to the URL that it's attached to, so that you then get at the end of all this these files with my words attached to them. Anyway, all right. So VRML is obviously important, because the world is three-dimensional, and VRML describes three dimensions. So that's got to make it important. There are two versions of VRML, 1.0 and 2.0. 1.0 is essentially the ability to navigate through static scenes. 2.0 is a fully interactive 3D world. Next file. So we have some later examples which are illustrated here. There's some obvious natural applications to three-dimensional terrain rendering using VRML, which is shown in this insert here. Next file. We probably have too many of these. Let's see what this particular file. You know, this one is must be a huge file. All right, so this illustrates something we built for the teachers which actually has not been deployed yet. So this is meant to be a model of how, of a particular way we could sort of deploy technology in education. So this is meant to be New York State, the interactive journey. So you can get from the web 30-meter geographical data. You can get the elevation data. So you can build a three-dimensional world, which you'll see later overlays on. And then the idea is that we can give anybody, but in particular we can give the school districts the 3D world of their particular region they're interested in, and then they can add information to that world and annotate it. So it's obviously the commercial applications are some 3D yellow pages, but here the idea will be take cultural and other types of nifty information about your world, and then you can place it in the 3D world and navigate through it to do some nice web-based pervasive technology thing. So if you click that red house, so VRML has clickable abilities, and if you click that red house, you will actually learn about Herkimer Home, which is one of the local cultural places near Syracuse. Next, that's just an enhancement of that. All right, so next, that's just some tutorial we have on VRML. The tutorial teaches you how to build that nifty car at the top there, uses that car as an example of VRML. Next file. So this is an interesting example which we just built and has some relevance for scientific computing. So here you have some 3D terrain of New York State, and we have here, we've taken a weather simulation and superimposed that on top of that scene. So we've taken 3D terrain, 3D scientific visualization, superimposed them, and now these are viewable using standard web technology in your favorite home or wherever you want to look at it. So this I find is an interesting way of delivering the results of HPCC simulations to the world. Next file. Well, I know it's not standard at the moment, I agree. So here's another, it's an enhanced web technology, but it's sort of illustrative of what web technology ought to be. Next file. Yeah, that, Marigany did that recently. It is in the online version. The online version of this note has all these files. This was only finished recently. There's also an MPAC handout, which we have, which has all that all those particular information in it, because it has our latest work in it, which includes that. Maybe you can bring some handouts. And could you bring some of the, there's a one by Wojtek and me on Webflow. Maybe you can bring that, Marek. I have some of them. Yes. You're lucky it hasn't changed more than it did. I've been on the traveling so much, I only had a day or so to change it on Saturday. Normally, I change things more than this. But sure, you're probably pleased with that. All right. So again, it's interesting to see how fast this field has grown. Here we have beautiful 3D standards, which was first thought of in spring of 94. So I see this as a rapidly moving area. Next file. BRML is based on the so-called Open Inventor ASCII format. Next file. And if this is some standard, BRML defines some standard hierarchical graphics graph with where a set of predefined objects, and you can generate general objects through an ability to specify polygons. Next file. All right, so here is your hello world. It's not three-dimensional, so we can't tell you how to do hello world, but we can tell you how to do something simple. So supposing you wanted to draw a cube next to a sphere, you would, here is the five lines you'd have to transmit from your server to your browser to get one cube next to one sphere. You would say cube, and that defines you a unit cube. Obviously, this particular cube has, you can specify lots of parameters of that cube if you wanted to. Then you can do a transformation, which in this case is by three units in the x direction, and then you say sphere, and that's it. And you transmit that down there, and the browser, the VRML browser, renders those commands, giving you a cube next to a sphere. You notice that our tutorial car had spherical wheels. The reason it had spherical wheels is that the sphere is a primitive in VRML, and so it's much easier to build spherical wheels than it is to build real wheels. But you could build real wheels in a more complicated fashion. Next file. So if you wanted to make yellow, if you wanted to change everything to yellow, you just use the so-called material node, and you specify the diffuse color followed by the RGB designation 110 gives you everything being yellow. The scope of any information is defined by these curly brackets, but this material is outside, is on the same level as cube and sphere. It refers to both the cube and sphere. Next file. And finally, but not quite finally, this shows how we could use a hierarchical fashion. We can essentially put curly brackets around cube and material to insist that only the cube be yellow. So that's it. So it seems there's some relatively, you know, so originally this was designed to be able to allow your F-16 internet game to talk to your M-1 internet game and allow the tank to shoot down the F-16 because they're using universal 3D descriptions. But this general concept of a universal 3D language is, in my opinion, much deeper than that. It has relevance to sort of industry product specification efforts, things like PDES and STEP, which I don't know a lot about. And it, I believe it's, although the implementation can be critiqued at the moment, this is a very important concept because the world is three-dimensional. Next file. I think I'm going to skip over most of the next one. So this shows that this picture was not done now in Syracuse. This shows how we could texture map and put a pretty picture on our sphere. What I wanted to briefly mention now is something which I'm going to start actually here. This one is on the web. I'm not showing it from this version because we already know these foils are screwed up. They're too small for this presentation. But this is an insert, and I would claim that this area has made substantial progress over the last few months. Although this is not the right foil. This is the one we had already. So an enormously important activity of the human race is called collaboration or interaction or communication or something. And I see the next set of a large number of commercial and other types of activities aimed at implementing, using web technologies, collaboration. I mentioned my daughter's Christmas present, I think she wants is, not only does she want to learn Java, we want her own chat group, so she wants to collaborate. So the industry standard collaboration, at least at that age, is currently text-based chat groups. But there's an enormous amount of activity in far more sophisticated types of interaction. And my belief is this is actually an important area for everybody to be working on, and I know, for instance, DOE, I think, has a big effort in this area to link the various labs together, because collaboration, you know, this is another example where I think we should contribute as a community, because collaboration is different in different worlds. Namely, the virtual birthday party is going to be different from the virtual university and different from the virtual research lab. And so it's pretty important for the different communities to try to understand the right collaboration model for their application. The teacher-student, the tutorial interaction, the consultant interaction, the peer-to-peer researcher interaction, they're all going to be somewhat different and require different capabilities and optimization. So I see a lot of important activities in this area. We've already mentioned CareWeb as an example of these so-called bridge collaborations, where effectively a database, in our case Oracle, provides a common point of reference for people to act, to link in an asynchronous fashion. Now, more exciting are these, let me do one which I'm not going to do because it's too advanced, the so-called televirtual environment. So that takes VRML 2.0, puts in avatars, which are your symbolic representation, and basically builds a full virtual world so that you don't actually realize that you haven't got out of bed, but really everything is simulated. So televirtuality is a full 3D simulation of a computer-generated world, which is what VRML 2.0 was formerly aimed at. So that's a far-out dream, or possibly it's stupid. But the near-term, near-term opportunity are these typically Java-based, Wojtek calls mirror collaboratories, where people's views and actions are synchronized. Events, whether they be text-based chats or video images or what have you, are broadcast in real time. The views don't really have to be identical. They just have to be generated by identical data, but you could generate a different URL on one client if you wanted to, because you have software that allows you to do anything. But that's, the actions are synchronized, because, for instance, we are offering this I mean, a lot of these foils here come from a fall semester certificate in Internet Systems that we're going to offer is a distance education course next March. And the way we're going to do that is we're going to put everything on a CD-ROM, not on this paper. We're going to use this Tango technology I will mention, which will broadcast the URL, which will then fetch it, not from MPEG, but from the CD-ROM. So you'll have a loosely knit, so that's an example of a different action. The action will be go to your local disk and fetch the data so that you can get very good graphics, but without high, so over a 8.8 kilobaud modem. All right. So let me just mention Habanero. Habanero is the most famous of these systems. You don't have this in your pay, so yeah, this only. So essentially, this is a bunch of typically Java clients hooked up by permanent channels to a Java server. That Java server has a session manager that ensures that each of these clients receives data. So it does multicast and broadcast as appropriate. So this technology at its core is relatively simple. It's just, and it's done using Java because of the ability to have this integrated in programming environment, and it's clearly far more naturally done with the same technology on the client and the server, because you also will eventually want to have multiple servers. Habanero and the other such systems have APIs which effectively allow you to link any application or, in some restrictions, any application to such a server. So a good example I'm familiar with is ABS. ABS has an API which allows you to link filters to an ABS network. Same here. You have a particular API. You have to essentially a particular method to allow yourself to receive and send information from your applications. So that's defined by Habanero. So Habanerizing an application involves building, looking at their API and building the necessary input and output subroutines or methods or whatever you want to call them. So here's a total Mac. So here's an example of so one of the first things Habanero did was take Michael's Visible Human applet and Habanero-ize it, which meant, again, a teacher could be sitting there, which would be a master, could be navigating the virtual human applet. That same navigation would be reproduced on every client attached to the Habanero server, so that you would then have a natural teacher, distributed teacher-pupil model. So this is extremely important for putting universities out of business. I mean, they might survive unless we can implement this, but we can do it. It's quite straightforward. And so this will allow us to fully implement the virtual university with great effectiveness. So you have checkers. They all have whiteboards of various types, text chats, graphing. They do have, of course, ordinary web pages. You can spawn existing web pages. So those are all. If any of you are familiar with the concept of DSI or SimNet, I mean the distributed simulation world, which is effectively the general event-driven simulation, human-in-the-loop type application. This technology, in my opinion, is a very wonderful technology for that world, because essentially here we have a session manager managing in some relatively straightforward way various clients. Yes? Well, Java is married to Corba. Java itself is married to Corba, so the answer is yes. The industry is doing. The industry would not let you get away without marrying this to Corba. Of course, Corba and Java and the web have sort of overlaps. They're not sort of unique, clean divisions. But obviously, you have to have the Corba link. And there is a Java-Corba connection, just as there's a Java database connection. So I believe that this type of application generalizes very well to link simulations and collaboration with people in the loop, computational steering, all those applications that we've done very well by generalizing the session manager to not just manage client people working together, but people and computer programs working together, because this is basically an event-driven, event-driven execution model. All right, let's go back to the foil, which was, you see, we made NCSA wipe out Marek by overriding him. So this is MPAC has a system we built actually as the front back end to the this command and control application, which has, we believe, has greater capabilities than Habanero in that it's much easier to link arbitrary applications to it. So we also think Tango is easier to pronounce than Habanero. Next file. So this is, so just to show that we also can have a ridiculous number of applications. We have a ridiculous number of applications. You see there a teacher, a physics teacher, using a neural net applet. This one you will not find in. This just came out. You'll see a teacher, there example of, so there's the command and control, the commander interacting synchronously with the troops. The one on the bottom left is actually a teaching tool for neural nets, where again the teacher would enter the letter, the applet then interprets the letter, and again this technology allows that applet to be mimicked on every one of the student's desks. And then you have various other such resources. This you have obviously electronic mail, chatbot, whiteboard, audio, and eventually video. It's actually not obvious that you need video, in that you can do almost everything you want seemingly with audio, but it's not clear whether you need video in these systems. That's the type of experimentation that one needs to do. Next file. So where are we now? All right. So that's the end of what I wanted to say about collaboration, which I think is the most exciting area. I think collaboration is so pervasively important, and it, I mean, even in, you know, when you're doing, let's say, it's the basis of, say, consulting at a supercomputer center. I mean, it's really pervasively a relevant technology, in my opinion. All right. We've already mentioned many times databases. This you can do for relational databases, object databases. I probably forgot to mention that VRML database, all that information with that database was stored in Alastra, which is an object database, which was then web linked. So that's, if you're thinking about objects placed in a 3D world, it's more natural to generate that, store that in a database. Next file. I'm going to go skip over these things. We've got too much stuff here. So this rather moth-eaten looking file here is just a screen dump of the Carrier Corporation homepage or a couple level deep. Their entire catalog we put into an Oracle database for them. So we built them the PL/SQL to manipulate that database. Somebody else produced the data. So when you go to the Carrier page, none of their product data is sitting on an HTML page. It's all sitting in fields in a standard Oracle database. HTML is generated on the fly. So I see that as the obvious way all product information will be done by shopping organizations in the future. You will not have static HTML. You'll sit it in a database and get with a single point of contact the database, and then you'll generate a wide variety of HTML pages with the latest price increases and the latest offers all suitably generated for that dynamic page. I should also point out Carrier is sort of nostalgic for me because I once tried to give them a talk about using parallel computing to design air conditioners. Carrier makes air conditioners. And so I had 5 people at my talk. It was about the most unenthusiastic audience I ever had. And these people were so sad. They said, well, management doesn't care about simulation. and we don't think we're doing very well. It was the most depressing interaction I've ever had. However, they loved it when we said that we could produce a web-based product catalog for them. So that sort of, in a nutshell, describes to you my InfoMail program, which is my industrial outreach program for New York State. I found it relatively difficult to persuade them parallel computing was useful, but I have persuaded them that in many cases that web technology is of great value. Next foil. And that's sort of why MPAC does web technology, not so much parallel computing, because the back-end industrial outreach cares more about web technology. So this file here, which is in your handout, just points out the dimension. We did none of these projects did we do 2 or 3 years ago. They're all happened over the last couple of years just because it is relatively straightforward to build web database linkages. So this is sort of enables you suddenly to use this technology called database technology, which up to now was too expensive and difficult to access. It's now much cheaper, especially on PCs, which is a mass market, and much easier to access. Next file. Alright, so this just tells you this overall architecture, which is sort of trivial. This is how it's done at the moment for WoW. WoW is a nice name, but on the way out, because this is too Oracle specific. So it's extremely simple architecture. You have a web client. The web client sends information, typically through a form, to a web server. The web server has a CGI script, which is essentially a trivial CGI script, which passes, in the case of Oracle, which passes the information onto a database server. These live typically on different computers for security reasons and general infrastructure reasons, though they could run on the same computer, of course. And then in the case of Oracle, Oracle provides a set of PL/SQL. PL/SQL is is a programming language supported by Oracle. It has essentially a set of routines to decode the input form and to generate the HTML. So Oracle provides you the subroutine to read the input and produce the output. And the handouts tell you some examples of how to do it, and there are actually some longer tutorials on the web on my webpage because I taught that in my class. PL/SQL, in my opinion, although I think at one stage PL/SQL maybe still is an important corporate advantage for Oracle, because the future is JDBC, the Java Database Connection, this architecture will not be preserved. Here you have this integrated architecture where the database has the programming in it. JDBC, the programming is sitting in a Java program which then accesses the database. And I think one's bound to use the JDBC architecture because it's vendor neutral, whereas this is vendor specific, albeit a dominant vendor specific approach. So I see this technology like CareWeb and the Carrier, which we built using PL/SQL, it's fine, it will continue to run, but it's not what we'll do 6 months from now. Now it's not quite obvious what you do because we're in transition, but 6 months from now, I'm assuming we'll use JDBC. Next file. Yeah, this is a reasonably interesting file. So what does this mean? So this means this is trying to put everything in context. So I would claim that almost by definition, data ought to live in a database. That may seem obvious, but it's not actually what people usually do. People often use the Unix file system as a database. A good example is most Unix mail systems use the file system as their database, not a database. But I already showed you how carrier data went into a database. So let's go back to our VRML world. We do not want to store that information, particularly as VRML. The VRML is not a storage technology, it's a display technology. It's a set of instructions to render us. So I have a claim that what you want to do is to store your data in the best format for that data in a database. Then you get to the yellow side in your syntax, which is the filter. So then you want to have a filter on the CGI side, CGI script, which accesses the database, and basically adapts something to the data. So what should it do? Well, it originally, for instance, in our VRML example, it produced VRML from that Alustra database. But that was not the right architecture, because what it ought to do is to produce information optimized for the network. So what it should be doing is doing, in that case there, optimal compression technology, stopping the information in the smallest possible space and sending it down that network. So that's where your compression technology goes. Then you roll down the network, and then we have a client-side filter, which in the new implementation of the GIS effectively unpacks the compressed data, produces the VRML, and then hands, finally, VRML, HTML to the browser. So the purpose of this is to point out that these different interfaces have different optimizations. And you want to choose in principle, at least if not in practice, you want to choose the interface at the right point. HTML is not the right way to store data because if we were doing it, well, it sometimes is, but if we're doing it for carrier, that's pretty silly to hardwire carrier's products into HTML pages. That's sort of clumsy. Rather, it's better to view HTML as purely ephemeral thing that gets wraps up the current product information and sends it to the browser. So that would be my claim, systems architecture. Next file. Let me skip these. These are in your handouts. HTTP and HTF are just the Oracle PLSQL routines for processing processing forms and producing HTML. I don't have time to spend much time on this, although this is quite important. That's digital video and audio. This is obviously relevant for collaboration. I'm extremely interested in it, mainly for building this virtual university, which is one of my goals. Wisdom International, I'm trying to set up as an international replacement for universities. But anyway, it's critical, obviously, as part of collaboration to be able to do digital video and audio. And obviously, your future, there's some expectation that your cable systems and TV systems will be delivered using some sort of web technology to your set-top boxes. So there's a huge effort in digital audio and video, which is a little confused by what is the right bandwidth, because we don't have ATM to everybody's homes yet. Do you really need video for collaboration, or can you make do with audio? And then there's is ISDN going to make it, or will it be submerged? Will cable modems become relevant technology? There are a lot of concurrent developments, which are infrastructure issues. Will the cable companies win, or will the telephone companies win, or will the satellite companies win? So all of these make this a relatively confused field. I think most of the one successful company is this Progressive Systems, which has the real audio technology, which is interesting because that's successful because they built very robust, pretty robust at least technology for audio, which runs over 14.4 and 28.8 kilobaud modems. So this is universal technology, digital audio technology. All the more sophisticated approaches of this type, I believe, sort of up in the air because of these unknown infrastructure issues. I should point out, there's a magic word here called streaming. I mean, if you fetch an MPEG movie down from a web page, you download the movie and then play it. That is obviously an unreasonable way to do collaboration. You can't download the latest collaborative session and then play it. It's got to be done using streaming technology. And if you have a Hollywood movie, that's also got to be done using streaming technology. So all the important developments in digital audio and video is not download technology, it's streaming technology. Because nothing else makes is realistic for large files or collaborative things. So if you skip ahead, you'll find this file, which you've seen before. So we've sort of done this, you see. We've done Windows and then now we're up to services. Next file. Now, services aren't terribly well defined, because as I mentioned, services are just generic applications. So whether something's an application or a service isn't so obvious. Basically, an application is a service if it gets reused multiple times. So we've already discussed Netscape and Microsoft and others and IBM will fight out the website publishing world. Information delivery, including digital archive, digital video, etc. That's an important service, which, as we mentioned, is a little unclear at the moment. Commerce technology is, in some sense, a service, in that then once you have commerce technology and security technology, then you can build a lot of other applications. Next file. We've done collaboration as a service, so I call collaboration a service because it can be applied in so many different applications. But a core technology such as Habanero or Tango would get reused in these different applications. So Habanero or Tango is a service. Using Tango for command and control or the Virtual University is an application. So I would say meta computing or web-based computing is a service which you can then build various different applications of. You can build the application to manufacturing, distributed manufacturing, would use the meta computing web service. I'm going to skip over this. I'm skipping quite a long way ahead. In fact, I'm going to go to this one. But these foils are in your page. So here's we did an analysis for NASA of the role of the NII or the requirements of the NII to build to do future aerospace manufacturing. And so what I would claim one had to do was, when you were doing that, looking at that application, you want to try to understand all these various web capabilities or web services and technologies and see what's special about this application. So obviously it has collaboration. So you have engineers in one place collaborating with engineers in another place. It's not so obvious that collaboration is terribly different from collaboration needed to support, say, the DOE labs or the virtual research environment in general. It needs meta computing. There's some scale issues and security issues there. One extremely important capability, which is probably different from most, is configuration control. A typical, at least in the military aircraft, the way they told me they operated is they have this central database. So at the beginning of the month, you have a sort of state for the aircraft. You then go out and explore various optimizations for a month, and then you coordinate again and you freeze. This is the aircraft, and you keep going like that. So because you want an aircraft at the end, which is a complex system of interlinked parts which must work together, coordination is far more important than in many web applications. Many web applications tend to be very loosely synchronized. So here we have an example. A particularly critical feature is distributed, coordinated, configuration-controlled databases. And that finally is terribly difficult to do that, but it is a feature of this application which is not seen in other applications. Next file. So this file gives some sort of numbers which I thought were quite interesting. So this scopes out the problem. So the top bullet tells you who I worked with in trying to do this, various industries. And we were particularly looking at a so-called multidisciplinary optimization system, which happened to be called ASOP, but that wasn't very, the particular details were not important. So I found the scope of the problem which they articulated to me is quite interesting, namely, the collaboration is actually quite big, namely, as you know, not so many aircraft are being built by the military these days, maybe no aircraft, but certainly not very many. And so any actual aircraft is going to be built as a collaboration between several large companies. So you're going to have, an estimate of six major companies. The 777, Boeing 777 had 20,000 suppliers, which and so you have some large so if you thought about this in terms of cyberspace, the virtual organization that you're going to have to support to manufacture an aircraft is pretty big and quite complex. So the number of people involved went from some 50 at the beginning to some 10,000 in the deployment, manufacturing and development phase. From the computing point of view, I found one number quite interesting, and that was that 10,000 programs were involved in designing an aircraft. Now you say, how could you possibly build 10,000 programs? Well, this is a rather loose definition of a program. Namely, it would include your favorite parallel three-dimensional Navier-Stokes solver, but it would also include your Excel spreadsheet to optimize the placement of the inspection port for the maintenance crew. So this was a wide spectrum of so-called programs. And the other point about these programs is they're not independent, but they're also not tremendously synchronized. Namely, they're loosely synchronized through these databases. So actually, the web a web approach where you link various programs to get distributed programs together is quite relevant. So it also says there ain't no way you're going to be rewriting 10,000 programs in Java. So whatever system we're going to be doing better support existing legacy programs. That's why I would claim that the most interesting near-term development, something which I'll say because we're going to get to it, in the case of building Java environments for programming, is to build Java wrappers that we put around existing programs that allow us to access the internals of those programs. So to be preserved, these 10,000 working separate programs. I'm going to skip the next files, which describe the many months of work done by the industrial collaborators. Let me now basically finish this presentation, this morning presentation, by discussing various aspects of computing on the web.